evening, everyone. This is Skinny E Media or Mark here to present a very special guest who you probably know from a YouTube channel known as Sites Obscene. He goes by Savedro or Savidro, I'll let you decide. And here he is, the man himself.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing great myself. Thank you for stopping on by.
You for having me.
Hey, you're very welcome there. I came about your channel mainly through special contacts that we made because we happen to both know Pisha or Jean-Paul Ravens. So that's how we sort of know it about. But here I'm going to be discussing the history of the channel and then also his personal experiences with ratings itself, particularly from an MPA perspective.
So it's actually very strange for me. If you look at, I'm a writer. I got my degree in English education. So technically, if I wanted to, I could teach, but I don't right now. I work in healthcare. But if you look at my earliest writings from when I was a child, when I was 8 years old, my stories, I rated them G, and it was because as a child. There were three things that I think are evocative of being an adult. And those things were a Budweiser beer, a pack of cigarettes, and an R-rated movie. And those three things together were, as a child, those are what you're just like, okay, those are the adult things. And then, somewhere along the line, when I was about 10, 11 years old, that's when I began to discover that there was another world, and another that R wasn't even the limit, that I was being lied to, and that I found in my father's closet, going back to Picha, I found in my father's closet, I found a recorded VHS. And it had a sequence on there called Erotische Cartoons. It was like erotic circus. It was a series of German cartoons, French, Italian. Fans of erotic animation would know, like Inanno della Strega, the Giva film. Or Snow White and the Seven Perverts, and a number of other ones. But at the very end of the film, at the end of the VHS, there was hours and hours of this. So lots and lots of different pornographic animations. But at the end of it was Shame of the Jungle, and this would have come from a 1979 Mita VHS, which is the only American physical release of Shame of the Jungle from 1979, so all the way back then, and there has not been a physical release of it since then. But I grew up watching that, and so think about that. My earliest exposure, one of them anyway, to another world, to the X-rated world, is because of Picha, and so. I feel like I owe him right now for giving me that rite of passage, and it's he strikes me as an artist, because his work is not well known in my country at all, and just like many of these artists, that we study, that I am so fascinated with, the works behind me, from Harmony Korine to William Friedkin, Andrew Dominik's Blonde, all of these films, and even Picha himself, their art is described as doggerel, trash, bathroom writing, pornography, garbage, the worst possible words that you could ever use to describe these people. And these artists often have sacrificed everything, have gone through everything in order to bring these art to the screen, or in the case of Picha, are deliberate acts of anarchy. And so if the words are in if the words are in a powerful person's hands, and that person chooses to depict Picha as, a disgusting person for making these films, they unfortunately are ignoring a large piece of what his importance is as an artist. And so that is what my work is about. I want to bring these artists into the back into the sun, to show them for the true visionaries that they are, for sacrificing so much. They do not deserve to be the objects of scorn. I think that they are owed better, especially nowadays when, to be an artist, to even try is so hard. I know that took forever, but I wanted to tie it back into Picha and explain my beginnings and everything.
Oh, but you got a good point there on a sort of censorship level because of his films being quite controversial to where New Zealand banned Jungle Burger. That's how it's known in the country. And also face a few obstacles in Spain and Portugal when they tried exhibiting it because of the dictatorships at the time. It is a, quite an interesting history of its own, but it also ties together in one or two worlds. First off, films that are aimed at an adult audience always are going to be much harder to sell and market because of varying standards and morality police. We certainly know that. Even though I'm partially American, I know how powerful advertisers and more majority groups like Moms for Liberty and stuff, who want to ban books and stuff, how powerful they are. And then on an animation level, because I also used to get in trouble for watching Japanese anime in the past. I know from experience that animation can have a funny way of appealing to children, even though it's not appropriate for children. From experience, I certainly realized this when South Park Big Along When Uncut came out in cinemas. I was certainly not 15, or in US 17. I wasn't certainly not that age. In Britain, you had to be 15 to go see it, and it bothers me to this very day. I cried, but I couldn't go see this cartoon movie that had kids swearing. That's my little terrors. I felt that way, the same thing with Team America World Police, because I wasn't quite old enough to see that. But then sort of anime came along, stuff like Afro Samurai, Elfen Lied, Exile Saga, Ghost in the Shell. Those were things you kids should be watching, but I saw them anyways when I was like 13, 14, and I was like, so that was my experience with it, but I didn't have that the same experience with The Simpsons. I watched that, wasn't banned from watching it like some people were. I didn't copy stuff from Bart Simpson. Yeah, so I'm NC-17 as a whole, because you tend to more focus on that aspect of things. I'm a bit more general with skinny media stuff. What a very mysterious rating in of its own right. That and the X rating that preceded before it. I sometimes have to wonder if the rating has any sort of validity in an age where you can just watch anything on your Netflix account. They don't censor it.
Yeah, that's the question that comes up all the time. And we are unfortunately about 25 years too late. The time to have made the NC-17 viable was 1990 through 1995. A lot of directors walked away from it, the opportunity to really show it off. The first directors that would have helped the rating at the very beginning, were the best thing for that would have happened to the rating for it to start out with is that it's not applied to an art house film. And unfortunately, that's what happened. It was applied to an art house film. What could have happened and what was supposed to happen is that it was supposed to be applied to Predator 2. And the director, and he has stated this in, Stephen Hopkins, I believe is his name. He stated that the MPAA was working with him all that summer, trying to get him to release it originally as X. And then when they created the NC-17, they were like, okay, can we want you to they were smart. They knew, okay, we have to have a hip, popular, cool movie that people are gonna go see attached to this, to get people in theaters to know that this is a serious rating. And so, unfortunately, the studio, I believe it was Fox, they kept cutting and cutting and cutting and cutting, and they submitted it 6 times, and they finally got their R rating. And so it ended up going and being applied to Henry and June. And now, a couple of months later, it could have ended up on applied to Godfather Part Three. That would have been the second time applied to a major Hollywood film. An Academy Award-winning director, it would have been indisputable. But unfortunately, Francis Ford Coppola cut the film. Now, in kind of a bit of irony, when Coda, the Coda version of Godfather Part Three came out in 2019, the footage that was originally edited, the violent footage, is put back, and now the re-rated version is R. So that same footage that was NC-17 30 years ago is now R. And that is proof. It's the oh my God, he admitted moment of to show that the violence has completely slipped. So what was NC-17 level violence in 1990 is now R-rated violence. So our standards for violence have slipped. And so that is why PG-13 films now have R-rated violence, and R-rated films now have NC-17 level violence. And going back to what you were saying before about, being unrated, yes, you can self-distribute and things like that. When it comes to ratings nowadays, it's mostly applied to theatrical. So the people that it's a circle jerk, and it has been for a very long time. 90% of all films ever rated come from the signatories. They come from one of the people that pays the bills of the MPAA to begin with. So you're talking about
Hey, Paramount.
Universal, Disney, Paramount, Viacom. Viacom owns Paramount. So you're talking about the big people, Sony, big, Warner, AOL, Time Communications, Warner, whatever that's called. So like,
Even when Fox was being bought out by Disney, Netflix filled the void as the sixth signatory.
Yes. And so because of that, it's like, those are the only people that are releasing movies to theaters anyway. So again, it's a circle jerk. They are applying the they're lying. They're acting like it's a nutritional facts sticker, except a nutritional facts sticker has government backing, and there's scientists, and there's a lot more to it. So they're lying and they're saying, "Hey, our product is fine," when in reality, what they're doing is they have mutilated what a product can be by saying, "Hey, artists, you can only do this." And unfortunately, it has, ruined a lot of media in the process.
I feel that way myself too, because I lived in the US for a bit of time, and there were some films that I did see that were given the cut. Raid 2 particularly comes to mind, and when I first got word that they had to cut and trim a few things just to avoid NC-17, but the R-rated version was still very violent nonetheless. Let's not forget that. I just felt like I was being cheated. And then my friend bought, the copy of the DVD for like a special gift or something. I felt like, you can just bought the Canadian copy or the one from Region 2 UK. Felt like if only I knew, I probably could have spoke up about it. And then, just recently, I have made an effort to actually, what's the word? Boycott any sort of MPA project that has been cut and censored, particularly for the localized market. And Infinity Pool, the most recent film that has been threatened with that rating to where in America is the cut rated R version. I said, no, thank you.
Yeah, this was sent to me. I did not buy it. It was given to me as a gift because I was one of the only people that was reporting on it for a long time there, because it got its NC-17 and there was a 5 month battle to get it to R. And something that a lot of people don't know is that there was a 12-year or a 10-year gap in appeals. No film had appealed its NC-17, mostly because a lot of films just kind of cut, or like a lot of films they cut and they released the other version to unrated, like an unrated DVD or something like that, or they got what's called a rating liaison, and you basically hire someone to look at your film before you submit it to tell you potential moments that could receive an NC-17 or a PG-13. You know what I mean? It's not just for NC-17, it's for lower ratings too. But you said if you have a high profile film, it's sometimes if you can't afford to send your film multiple times, it's best to get a rating liaison. But there had not been a appeal for that reason in 10 years. And the last one had been the Jennifer Chambers Lynch film Chained. And Jennifer Lynch is also known for doing Boxing Helena, another film, one of the only films to win an appeal, an NC-17 appeal. So yeah, Infinity Pool is an interesting case in the fact that they even chose to appeal it. Most films just choose to cut it.
I certainly give credit to Brandon Cronenberg, more so than Neon distributors, for actually trying to go out of their way to say, hey, there's been similar material in films. I think it was by a tie, though, or maybe like a sort of like 6-5. They said, you're almost there, but you lost. And that what bothered me. And I, convinced, when it did come out for VOD release in the US to people, don't watch Infinity Pool if you live in America, even in Canada, because they released the censored version in Canada for theatrical distribution. Don't see it. So instead, I went to see Passages, which was a film that was given NC-17 because of sexual content, LGBT elements, which has been quite controversial, particularly in America with Ron DeSantis and stuff like that. To where I saw it in the UK, uncut 18, and in the US, they said unrated, fine as it is, we're not going to bother with the UK. I'm glad that they did that anyways, because it was more or less going to be a film that's going to be aimed at the people with the city, university folk, then regular people aren't going to be watching that. So they've kind of done that.
Well, and again, it's like, this isn't the type of movie that's going to get marketing that a Paramount or a Warner Brothers film or a Disney film or a Netflix film is going to have. It's not going to have any of that marketing. Its push is going to be art houses. And so because its push is going to be art houses, it's going to have people with a more free mind. And so it's not going to be concerned with a rating. And that is the same exact thing that applies to horror films. Horror films, the very point of a horror film is to push the envelope. And so these guys, they're not concerned with ratings. Since the very beginning, since 1978, when Dawn of the Dead came out, the point of Dawn of the Dead is to be a, was to be as grotesque and have the most realistic violence ever put to screen. At least as grotesque as had been put, out aside from say for instance like Herschel Gordon Lewis films like Blood Feast and Wizard of Gore. But the idea was to be outrageous. The idea was to go that far. And on the poster itself it says, this film contains no sex. But due to the extreme violence, no child under 17 will be allowed. And so it was announcing in 1978 this film, it would have an X rating, but it's basically saying we do not have a rating, but it would be an X. And when they did that, it and they basically created the sense of unrated. And from that point, and you know, there had been films that were not unrated, that were not rated before then, but it popularized it, popularized the mythos of it. And if you look at films from the 1980s, ones that follow in its wake, particularly most of them video nasties, so you have Maniac, you have Reanimator, you have Zombie, or Zombie
Stevens.
2, yes,
And then the most famous one, Evil Dead,
Evil Dead 1
which
and 2. So all of those films on all of the posters, if you look at the original posters for America, they all say something along the lines of, you know, no child 17 and under will be admitted. But it does not say, you know, this film is rated X. And it's because X right at that during that time had been synonymous with porn. So in answer to you, kind of like what we were building towards, you know, the violence aspect, horror assumed the violence. And so it made the idea of an all adults r only rating something different. And so because pornography naturally, I mean, just look at the word sex, it has the word the letter X in it. Because of that, because the letter is in the word, it will be synonymous. And because horror chose to go unrated, sex became associated with X. Now, again, adjacent to that, when NC-17 becomes the thing, the first people to get an NC-17, they are erotic adult or erotic art house films and softcore porno. There's no way around it. I'm sorry. And so again, when the beginning of the people in your rating are either erotic art house films or softcore porno, everybody's going to look at that at the beginning and say, oh, this is just the same thing as X. And when you do that again, you have Jack Valenti behind it, and he looks at it and just says, oh, just like 20 years prior, he's saying these movies are garbage, these movies are shit, nobody would make these movies. And when you do that, you kill your rating. And then you know, that's when you have the LA Times announcing, hey, we're not gonna have any NC-17 advertisements. And then, you know, next thing you know, New York Times is pulling out, and newspapers everywhere, and then television stations, and you know, so these directors like Ira Sachs of Passages, they have the ability to now, as long as they have a distributor like MUBI, so he lucked out through them because MUBI has their own app. And so regardless, even if so they are in that way, they're like Netflix, they have their own distribution. So even if they can only get into a variety of art house theaters, let's say like 40 is a pretty standard art house run in America, 40 theaters. He lucked out because he got to deliver it straight to an app. And it, not a, so because of that, he doesn't even have to worry. Doesn't have to worry about what it's going to be rated and stuff like, you know, not every director has that opportunity. And what I am interested in is not where we are now, but how we got to this point and what we had to go through to get here. You know what I mean? So some people think that, you know, I'm fascinated with trying to bring it back. Like I'm, you know, and I guess to some degree I am, but only in so much that I think that it requires more attention. I don't think that it can be saved. I don't think that there's going to be 20 NC-17 films that just start coming out. I think that it is way too late for that. But I do think that there are hundreds, if not by my calculations, over 1,000 films that have been mutilated to become R. And in a lot of cases, such as like Event Horizon, we don't have that footage anymore. It's gone. You know, we have an idea of it. We have like some shots of it, but like that's it, you know. And we're talking about 15, 20 minutes in some cases. And that means a lot to me, you know. In a lot of cases, it's only like a couple of seconds, but in some cases, it's like, you know, 20% of the movie. Right now, you know, going back to Picha, it's 20% of his movie.
Oh, leaving off from where we last started, we're discussing about films that are R-rated in recent years that pushed the envelope quite a bit, and we were discussing whether it was merited or not. Personally, for me, I thought Ty West's X, Poor Things, certainly pushed the envelope as far as the R rating is concerned. I don't know if you agree with me on this, but maybe the MPAA is probably getting a revelation.
It kind of depends. I would think that it's whoever has money. If you have money and if you're paying the bills, look at these studios getting away with it. You know, these are multi-million dollar projects with major stars attached. You would not see the same leeway for an independent project. You know what I mean? They're even with even you know even under the guise of being directed by Ty West and like and Yorgos Lanthimos, these are still the you know these aren't the first films in their careers. These are well into their careers. Ty West has been making films for 20 years. Yorgos Lanthimos has been making films for you know I think about 17 years, perhaps even longer than that, probably 20 plus years as well. So you're looking at well-established directors that have access to top-tier actors and actresses in their films. And so, you know, if you had a film such as, take for instance, Ira Sachs, we were talking yesterday about Passages, that film, you know, maybe had a budget of just over $1 million or something like that. It does not have stars. It in it, it's in another language, you know. Well, parts of it, and so it's like, you know, it has all these barriers of entry for a traditional American audience, and you know, because of that, it's going to be harder for them to fight an NC-17. So that way, so because of that, they didn't fight it. Whereas with something like Poor Things, you know, it probably did get an NC-17 on the first pass, and what they did was they just kept cutting and cutting and cutting until they finally got it. And people like Martin Scorsese or Brian De Palma or Paul Verhoeven, what they do is they're smart. The entire piece is obscene. Everything about it is obscene. So because of that, you can't just take out a couple of brush strokes. But what they end up doing is just taking out a couple of brush strokes, you know, so to speak, from the painting. It ends up just coming down to a couple of seconds here or there. And so you're often it's a better thing for you to have more provocative things in your film, because if you have more provocative things, then they won't know where their view should be. Whereas if you have just one sex scene, all of the focus is going to be on that one sex scene. If you have one graphic murder scene, all of the focus is going to be on one graphic murder scene. And then you have a film like Saw. The reason why Saw X is able to get away with that is because the whole thing is like that. And the film has also, the series has desensitized us so that, again, the first Saw, the very first Saw when it was released, you know, this version, this the NC-17 version, it's very weak in comparison to what would come later. Even the NC-17 version is weak in comparison to what Saw X was. And so because of that, and it's the only way that happens is by exposure to so much. When we have seen so much over and over again, Eventually, we say, okay, well, this isn't so bad. Well, that's not so bad. And this isn't so bad. And so we also have to view things like Poor Things or Ty West's X in the perspective of the time that we're currently in. You know, these things are no longer taboo. Now, some things are taboo, but not everything. And so those filmmakers have just the right amount of things behind them. They have the funding. They're far enough in their career to be able to not only have the money to fight it, but to have the credibility to fight it. Not everybody is in that position. So I would not say that the MPAA is changing. I would say that them, just like anybody else, has been able to benefit from certain aspects of the business, whereas other filmmakers are still having to struggle. They're still having to, even, you know, it is a benefit to be able to have your film uncut and to release direct to streaming, but it's also a hindrance because you're not going to make nearly enough money, not nearly any money, as compared to box office receipts and things like that. You're not going to have make nearly as much, and the physical media is not there anymore either. The physical media is maybe at 10, 15% at where it was at the height, as opposed to the height in 2007. So we live in a completely separate time where, even though yes, you can release unrated and stuff like that, and even though the ratings don't mean it as much anymore, it doesn't mean anything better financially for your film. You know, it does not mean that it's going to save your film in some ways. So you might save money by not having your film rated, but if you're not going to have it in the theater, a lot of audiences won't be able to see it, and you won't be able to get as nearly as much money. The theater is one of the last true ways to really make money off of your film anymore. If you sell it to streaming, you'll be lucky to see money off of it, residuals and things like that. I don't know how it works for everybody, but it can't work great. I know it's like flat packages. So, I think that we're at a position where, again, it is an outdated, the systems of classifications are outdated. And if anything, I think they should switch to what the TV format, TVY7, TVMA, TV14. I think that's perfect. It doesn't need to go beyond that. We don't need the distinction of R and NC-17. Now, I do believe in the distinction between film and pornography, and that is a very hard thing to define. And I also do, I personally lump graphic violence into pornography. Because to me, the term pornography does not represent meant to engage, like arouse. And I know that makes it a little bit more complex. But to me, pornography is, and I guess to some degree, it is a level of arousal, because Tom Savini referred to graphic violence. When you get to the most violent scene, it's he referred to it as the cum shot. So that is the king of X-rated violence, referring to it as the cum shot. So I that's why I refer to it as the same level of pornography, and I would say that. I would say that, in that regard, it is a thrill. The thrill is not sexual, obviously, but in terms of how I define them, I do think that there needs to be a separate a distinction for those types of films, and that's where the NC-17 comes in.
That's what I was meaning to make a point about, because my friend Rob Bannister and I, we always talk about on our podcast saying maybe there should have been a distinction between films that aren't for children versus films that are for, youth. I'm in a public setting, so I've got to be a little bit careful what I say, but let's say Kleenex. So, yes, unfortunately, we don't have such a system, but I know in the UK we do. You have 18, no kids allowed. You have R18, which is for the stuff that, people watch in closed doors. Canada, some provinces I heard they have the A rating versus the restricted category, but you hardly see films ever get that such rating as films that are for pushing the envelope, changing to be 18A in that respect. Australia has R18, X18. So I certainly see where you're coming from there. And I would like to make a point about films that use violence for the sake of the thrill. I don't know if you may see me eye to eye on this, but films like Fallen Down, God Bless America, the Abel Ferrara MS-45, Heathers. These are films that get you excited to watch someone killing and stabbing in the most grisliest ways, or just like cold-blooded murder. But people are like, yeah, John Wick sort of operates on that respect too. What's your view on that? Like vigilante films.
Yes, there's a anti-hero you're referring to. All of those films that, for the most part, that ties back into like even Taxi Driver, Travis Bickle. These are anti-hero characters, and so these are people that are only going to be understood by a select variety of society. And because of that, you're only gonna have a limited audience. Not everybody's gonna be prepared for.
What is your favorite film with that rating?
I've given a lot of thought. It's complex for me, and I would say for the most part, Killer Joe is probably my favorite NC-17 a lot. I loved Crash for a very long time. I could talk about that film forever. My favorite is probably Santo Sangre, the Alejandro
Jodorowsky.
Jodorowsky film. This is the 4-disc box set from Severin. And then I also have the VHS copy. This is the NC-17 version from 1991. You can see the NC-17 right there.
Oh, that must have cost a fortune just getting on eBay or wherever you got it from.
Oh well, let's put it this way. I have the number one NC-17 collection in the world. I have almost all of them. There is nobody that owns more than me. No one. And the reason why I know that there is no one is because I have information no one has. So I have more than anyone. So I because I have secret
Information nobody has that is not public.
So because of that I have yeah, exactly. I know versions of films that people didn't know were NC-17. So I'm very, very lucky about that. I'm also a big fan of Urotsuki Doji, the anime film. Directed it, it's not directed by Toshiyama Iida, but it's created by Toshiyama Iida, and
It's
directed
one
by Hideki Takeyama.
because we talked so much about the more adult end of the spectrum. On the flip side, the G rating, fun for the family. It's more or less been there since really like the 2000s, really, when all these kids' films now bump to PG these days. And it's a bit
Well,
sad, really, because I grew up with stuff like Toy Story, Marvel Company, and Aladdin. Those were all G rated.
the creation of the PG-13 simultaneously destroys the G rating and the NC-17 rating.
I believe that.
So because of that, it, it and Look at the 22 years prior, or not the 22, I guess it would have been 17 years prior to the creation of the PG-13. You know, the G films in the top 10 of the are in every year of the top 10 of the box office. There is a G-rated film from 1968 to 1984, and then some years even after that. But for though that year, those that timeline, there was at least one G-rated film in the top 10 every single year. And now, you know, it's PG or higher. Disney has kind of made PG the new bench, like the new low, like that's the lowest that you can go. And not many directors extend beyond that. But in those first couple of years, directors were willing to show more things, but it's also there is an idea now of everything is provocative. Everything requires a warning. You know, back in 1968, smoking was so prevalent that if you had smoking in a film, nobody gave a shit. There was no smoking warning. Now it's a big deal. You know, in when people first saw Mary Poppins, you know, to kind of tie it to something that just recently happened with the BBFC, you know,
We rated it
nobody,
PG.
nobody cared that it had racist remarks for, you know, what are we talking about now? 50 years, literally 50 years, 60 years since it had come out. Nobody had cared. You're telling me that in 60 years, the BBFC not once heard racist terms? And it's no, we're viewing it through modern eyes. And you know, when you do that, it really transforms a lot of stuff from back in the day. That's why you see so many kids swearing or smoking in films from the 1970s. It's not like that isn't still happening. It's just like it was, you know, it was you know, they didn't care that they were showing it. Now it's a big deal. It's a faux pas to show things like that, you know. So you have to, they have to really cut back.
No, you're absolutely right. It does sort of bother me, sort of that, people try to compare different eras and trends from one another. Because when I was growing up, you could get away with a lot of danger at the G and PG level. It just doesn't seem like that anymore nowadays. I don't know if you're a millennial or Generation X, but I'm sure, because I'm a millennial myself, I've noticed quite a few changes within my time.
I'm 33. I'm about to be 34, so I guess timeline wise, I'm a millennial. But brain wise, because of the family and location of where I grew up, I've always been a Gen Xer, and I was raised by boomers. So you know, that's just that's probably where I get a lot of my kind of my punkish attitude. I would say that I am more of a Gen Xer than a millennial. Even to this day, a lot of the music that I listen to is Gen X music. I've never really got outgrown that. So I don't know. You know, it's we certainly live in different times, I can tell you that.
Oh, absolutely. One thing that is bothering me as far as ratings and censorship level is concerned, it seems like, well, in my country, you get a lot of these sort of violent films at 15 and stuff. It's almost like there's so much of it in all these horror movies that nothing is really taboo anymore. And with TikTok and YouTube not having any sort of age content filters that are quite defined, unless they put like a sort of 18 plus paywall or something for certain videos, which just feels like, what else is there? It seems to me the most important things that are out there, as far as I'm concerned, on a sort of political dimension, like if you talk about racism or wokeness, abortion, LGBT, or Russia, Ukraine, Israel, Gaza, people get clogged.
Is that you, skinny e-media? I'm gonna deport you and you're fired.
That's something that I kind of am experiencing now, is because Not every director wants to be involved with the project about speaking out and being rebellious, and when there's other things going on in the world. So it's a constant issue to be able to maintain your voice and to have your art be out there untarnished and untouched by other people. But regarding violence, it isn't, and violence is something. Both sides, sex, violence, or all aspects of this, sex, violence, language, even drug use, these are all very complex issues that cannot be dealt away with so frivolously. And so they require a lot of analysis. They re require serious discussion. And I think that's the most important thing that's held away from the conversations about classification. The best that these people can do is give you a recommendation. These are recommendations. The best thing that a parent can do is have a dialogue and a conversation with their children. These films, if you are provoked by it, good. Go talk to someone about it. Work out your thoughts and your feelings and your passions and your emotions. If you are inspired by it, good. Let that fuel something. But don't denigrate it or destroy it or do. There are good things to come from art, from all forms of art. There's good things to, there's something to be learned. There's a positive to be learned from everything.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, every film is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're gonna get, which is Forrest Gump, a little joke right there. But as far as I'm concerned, danger. But at least in our country, 18 is a very distinguished and respected category. In America, NC-17 is not. They treat it as if it's like a crime prison sentence. You got in there for tax fraud. Or
Well,
embezzlement.
that goes back to what we were talking about yesterday about how the reason is because it just didn't have a good start. It was immediately tied to erotica and softcore pornographic films. And because of that, it never had a chance. If it had been tied to a blockbuster, a film that was going to do $100 million at the box office, then we would be talking about something different. It would have saved the rating. And something that to keep in mind is that in the UK, you're right. So it's not only that. It's the UK has had longer with an 18 rating. I think they declassified the X in 87. Am I wrong?
2nd, 4th of November 1982, X
82.
became 18,
Okay, that's what I
mainly
thought.
because of home media and
Yeah,
more
see.
panics about the horror movies.
Yeah, so you have 8 more years with to have the rating be classified by that point. England also has a much smaller pool of people. It I think it's roughly the size of a couple of our southern states put together.
Well, about less than 70 million people in our country compared to 340 stateside.
And so because of that, the pool is smaller, and it's also it was established better. It had a longer the rollout was better. 18 sound just 18 sounds better than NC-17. So there's a million things that were working against us having it make sense as opposed to the UK. And again, going back to what we were saying. The 18 classification comes about during the video nasties issues. So because of that, the UK already had the issue with unrated solved. You couldn't go out unrated, it was just 18. And so because of that, it was automatically tied to graphic violence. Now the MPAA, they had 20 years against them. Of films in America using the just going out as unrated. So because the UK had the benefit of the rollout being better, the rating making more sense, More films distinguished with an 18 going out, it had more of a chance. If we had films like Scream and Die Hard with a Vengeance and Braveheart, and you know what I mean? Like the money makers go out with an 18 rating, it would have been a completely different story. But again, this goes back to what we were saying before. The creation of the PG-13 in the States destroyed the adults-only rating and the family-friendly rating. The only rating that became palatable from that point on was PG-13. It was the box office rating. And if you look at it, films did really well before, but they didn't make $1 billion. They started making $1 billion when the PG-13 came out, and it was the perfect formula, just the right amount of everything, just the right amount of sex, violence, language. Steven Spielberg, when it was created, he referred to it as hot sauce. You have a regular film and now you have the hot sauce, just the goods, just a little bit a zest to make it just a little bit better, the spiciness.
Well, I kind of disagree with Mr. Spielberg on this one because there are so many movies I saw when I was a child that I love, and they necessarily didn't need to have extreme content just to appeal to my psyche or anyone else's. If anyone does ask, my favorite film that is, well, just ever is Toy Story. It's G, but it's PG in the UK because of use of fireworks and explosives by a child. But as far as like PG-13 is concerned, it's actually Small Soldiers, which we rated as PG in my country because of violence and horror and a bit of language. And most people don't view Small Soldiers as a PG-13 film, but it actually is, mainly because of Gremlins. Which goes back to how you knew about Joe Dante and his issues with the censors, because many people feel, particularly with Gremlins, I'm sure with Small Soldiers, that his movies were too violent for young kids.
Small Soldiers, in particular, what's funny is that they wanted to make it a PG film, and the studio originally came to Joe Dante and they told him that they wanted to make it a PG film, and they told him that there was no way possible. And so that's one of the reasons why it kind of has a choppy cut. If you watch Small Soldiers, it kind of has inconsistent cutting. It's because they went back and forth on whether or not it was going to be a PG film or a PG-13 film. In the States. So it could have ended up that the version, what might have happened historically is that there's a version that you would have seen that was even less violent. But luckily, Joe Dante prevailed and he was able to get the violent version on screen.
Tell him I said hi and tell him thank you. The
I'll
only
see what I
reason why
can
I
do.
say is because, you got the signature having like an autograph from Gremlins,
Oh
like a
yes.
cut
Well, and
print.
we did an interview, and I took the video down. It was up for 4 months, and it has footage that was removed from Gremlins to get the PG rating. It originally gave the film an R, and it was one of two shots in the film that originally gave the film an R, and I convinced the other one is the one that I have signed. So I had all this and I had it filmed and it was up on it did very well. I think I got 3 or 4,000 views, and then I pulled it down because I wanted to work on it a little bit more. I didn't like it was almost an hour long, and I thought that it was a bit laborious in parts. And then the interview with him was also flawed, had a very poor connection. And so the sound was in and out, and I needed to fix it. I was never satisfied with how it went out. So I'm working on that now.
Well, I'll keep my ears and eyes peeled for what will be to come in the future. But I know it's not really related to the explaining itself, but what is your favorite film? Just out of curiosity, I'm going at a flash, given your age and stuff, and you probably are thinking Jurassic Park or
No,
Titanic.
no, no. Again, I think about this all the time because on Twitter it's always popular to post your top four. And so I don't think I could ever come up with a favorite film because there are so many that I like to watch. So I can give you a handful of my favorites, and then that'll give you kind of an idea of the type of films that I love to watch over and over. Beetlejuice, believe it or not, Richie Rich, the Macaulay Culkin film Richie Rich. I love that movie. I think it's such it's a very underrated comic book adaptation. It's left out of the conversation most of the time. But I just love that movie. It fills me with joy for some reason. It reminds me of childhood. The Witches, the Nicholas Roeg film. I'm a tremendous fan of that. Be Ralph Bakshi's American Pop, Pedro Almodovar's Carne Tremula, or it was released stateside as Live Flesh. It actually translates to Trembling Flesh, but it was Live Flesh in America. That's my favorite Almodovar film. Tromeo and Juliet, the trauma film from by Lloyd Kaufman.
You've got a trauma logo on there, so you're playing that
Yeah,
Toxic Avenger.
I'm wearing a trauma shirt. I love I love transgressive stuff. I do love family stuff as well. I mean, there I love Rango. I just did a interview on Rango, the Johnny Depp Gore Verbinski animated film.
You talked to Gore Verbinski, who done
No,
Pirates of the Caribbean.
I didn't do an interview with him. I did an interview with a podcaster about that film. Yeah.
Bravo.
So that just came out today. I just have so many favorites. And I have ones that aren't necessarily my favorites, but ones that I can watch over and over again, like Goodfellas, Heat. Scarface. These are movies that are masterpieces, and I can throw them on just kind of anytime and have them playing in the background. My favorite Christmas movie is Ernest Saves Christmas. Again, it's like so. I have a. There are two sides to me. There is the wholesome family-friendly side that loves PG films, and then there is the hardcore, crazy, insano side that likes the X and NC-17 stuff. And I am the person in the middle. So, I like a lot of different stuff, but. It kind of depends. I don't like everything, you know what I mean? There's stuff that annoys me. There's stuff that I think is just okay. But I think overall I do like the transgressive films the most. That's why I've made my career, so to speak, in that field.
Films that have the excellent 17 rating. My actual favorite one is, weirdly enough, a toss between Midnight Cowboy and Killer Joe, or to some extent, Man Bites Dog, which is Belgian. But when people think of those movies, they don't, because Killer Joe, it's not a sexy movie. It's just a nasty, dark comedy, crime drama. And
Well,
then
and
Midnight Cowboy.
see what you just did though. What you just did is you implied that NC-17 means sex. You
Exactly.
just
That's what I'm talking.
put your own bias on it. See, that's what I'm saying. Man Mites Dog is NC-17 for violence, and so is Killer Joe. So NC-17 does not mean pornography. It can sometimes mean violence. Both examples you just gave were for violence. So again, you're right. It is not a sexy movie. That's
Oh,
the distinction. It is an adult
that
movie.
we
Yes.
so fear.
Though the I would say probably about 50% of all films that were given an X in those first several years were re-rated R. And it's because the parameters of what an X-rated film were changed, and so did the age. And so, if you got an X rating in those first couple of years, it was re-rated R by the end of the 80s.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I mean, Midnight Cowboy, there's stuff in there that's probably just even about the same, maybe a little more than some PG-13 movies. But I understand why it was gone, because the theme is quite provocative, and weirdly enough, it actually still retains its 18 certificate in the UK even to this day. And 18, or X back when it first came out, actually meant 16 and up. So it actually
Yeah,
had its rating bumped by a little bit.
I would say that it people it's a film that people are back and forth on, just
Like
like
Clockwork Orange.
just like Clockwork Orange, just like Scarface, just like Cruising, The Exorcist. These are all films that everybody is just like, is it R, is it X? And it's like, yes, it is, it's both. It was both. There is no way around it. It is both. It is the line. If people will say, what is the line? And the line is those films. Those defined what can be done as far as you can go in an R film. And so I would say that, it's both. It kind of goes back and forth.
I suppose there. I know of Clockwork Orange. That was a movie. My father, he had to watch it in America. He legally couldn't watch in the UK because of that 20-plus-year ban. Stanley Kubrick said, "Please withdrew my film from distribution because of copycat crimes that were occurring in the country." And for a long time, when I was growing up, I was told myself, "You shouldn't watch this. If you even touch the DVD or VHS, you're gonna get grabbed." Wait. But when I finally did see it, I was like a bit nervous. Oh, I saw the evil Clockwork Orange movie, but then I thought, so what? It's about the same as Fight Club. Fight Club now has been re-rated 15 after being an 18 with some cuts for so long.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's all systematic changes. It's dependent on who is in charge of the country at the time, and what the society is really, the pulse of society is. And the pulse of society is really chaotic and violent right now. So, we're more accepting of chaotic and violent themes and depictions.
I would say so too. But then again, there are some studies that have been done recently pointing out Generation Z being somehow more conservative than millennials when it comes to the birds and the bees, which I
Yeah,
just find strange.
that's tied to what we were just talking about before, and I would say that they are more the only difference is that the pool that they're pulling from is people that are more willing to say that already. They're predisposed to say that. These are people that are willing to talk. You know what I mean? So there's just like with the, there's always going to be only a select amount of people in the country that are willing to vote. So we're talking about, a small percentage overall. Even if they do, they say, oh, this is so and so millions of Americans and stuff like that. It's because this generation is the first generation to be able to instantly say whatever they want. And guess what? None of these people. Let's say that we went back to the 70s or the 80s. There's just as many people not having sex back then, or trying to say, this and that and the other, or I wouldn't be doing this, and probably even worse because then, Christianity was more of a thing. The only difference is they didn't have the ability to immediately say it to millions of people within a matter of seconds on their phone. They didn't have that for generations, and so. Those studies are skewed for that reason. This is the first generation that is able to even elocute or even speak on the fact of sexual things as soon as they're happening. 10, 11, 12-year-olds who are barely even able to really know what is happening with their body while they're going through puberty, of course they're gonna get online and say, oh, I don't care about sex and blah. Like, these people don't even have formed. They can't even be considered adults yet. They don't know what's going on yet. And so, yes, this generation could claim that, but I think it's also just because this generation overall is just more vocal. You know what I mean?
More vocal and also the internet. Everyone's got mobile phones. You check on the
Yeah,
Wi-Fi,
and
so check on these dodgy sites. I'm like,
well,
back in my
and
day, you had to go to a certain corner. You know, cover your
yeah,
face so you don't get caught and get a
well,
picture.
and people know where they're at. You know, pornography has such a stigma now. I refer to what happened with it in during the 70s and 80s as films used to be a T-bone steak. They used to have multiple parts. There was sex on one side, violence on one the other side, and then drugs and language or whatever on the top there. Well, what happened in the 1980s is part of that T-bone steak got cut out and thrown to the side. And they said basically, you know what? We don't have to have the story or a plot. We can just cut out one aspect of these types of films and market just that. And once they said, hey, we can just market the sex, we don't have to have any of this other stuff, we can just churn them out as cheaply as possible, then films transformed into something else. And since then, the meat has had to adapt. And so now that's why we get like the small ribbon of sex, the small ribbon of meat on the side. And pornography is its own steak by itself now. So because we have made that distinction, and the distinction has been like that for so long, people naturally overreact when there is a sex scene in a film nowadays.
I guess because, well, I'm just taking everything into account here because there are, it's culture wars going on between left and right. And then also, backlash from Christian and feminist groups who say, oh, no, you can't do that, or can't do this. And I know in the 80s, you had Reagan and the moral majority, and I'm sure a lot of that said it was sort of a killer on what you could say or what you couldn't put in stuff. And I'm sure. Because in the UK we had Thatcher and the Video Nasties Panic, and that was a bit of a nightmare to deal with. My friend, he was born in 85. He can speak on this a lot more. I can't because I was born in the early 90s. So, but the effects still linger on to this day. Now, with that being said, however, because you've seen a host of films that are quite questionable, were there any films growing up, or even with your wife or girlfriend, that you were told, if you watch this, you're grounded, or you had to sneak and watch it behind the scenes, no one's watching.
I mean, that naturally happens. And during my childhood, it was the traditional films. I was born in 1990, so Boogie Nights was the one that I grew up hearing about. And then Boogie Nights and Private Parts. Private Parts had come out. Those are the same thing. Those are the first two dirty films I remember hearing about because I was 7 years old. And 1997 was probably the year that I really start remembering cinema. That's when I went to see Titanic twice. And so I remember vividly going to the cinema with my family. And again, both Boogie Nights and I forgot the other one I just said,
It
but
was the Howard Stern one.
yeah, Private Parts. So both of those came out the same year. Everybody's talking about them, and those were the big no-no films. And then I remember when they came on TV, and I would get in trouble for even seeing just the version that was on TV. Then I think, when I was 9 years old, I remember Eyes Wide Shut became the big thing. And then it wasn't until I was 11 years old and I found the pornography tape.
Ladies and gentlemen, the following segment may contain explicit dialogue and references to experiences that may be offensive to most Americans. Just be warned.
In my father's closet. That's the one that had the Shame of the Jungle on it. And it had a variety of other pornographic cartoons which were far, far more graphic than Shame of the Jungle. I never got caught for that. I still have never been caught for it. I always thought that I would be caught for it, and I think that because I never got caught, that gave me the carte blanche, so to speak, to feel like this was my calling. Does that make sense? When I was a kid, before, you hear about these films, and these were R-rated films. But when I finally did discover pornography, I never got into trouble, and nobody ever found out. And so because of that, my perspective on it has been very skewed for a very long time. I've always been able to, I got away very early, I found a way very early how to disable they call it the V chip on the TV over here. I found out very early how to disable the V chip on my TV when I was 11 years old. So I was able to watch pornography, from 11 years old on. And so from that, because of that, you're talking about 8 years of my life before I graduated high school, of watching graphic material. And so I had seen the most graphic, many of the most graphic films of all time by the time I was 18. And I did all that without my parents' permission, without telling them, without, and so because of that, because I did not have anybody in my face and telling me, hey, this is wrong, anymore anyway. I did prior to that. But when we finally moved and I had access to DirecTV and I disabled the V chip, then that period was no more. Then it became about other things. It became about, I don't do this, don't say this, don't dress this way. But the things that my parents were least concerned with was the media that I was watching, probably because they thought that I had parental features on my TV. They had no idea, but it's their fault for not monitoring what I was viewing. So I am very, very lucky.
Well, make me seem like I'm a born again Christian almost. I mean, the most dangerous thing I saw was South Park: Bigger, Longer, and Uncut, because I wanted to see it because it was a cartoon that came out in 99. I wasn't old enough to see that.
So that came out when I was 8 years old, and no, my parents watched it with me. so I was I would have seen it when I was 9, and that might be a film that, if I remember. People were invited over to our house when it was rented. So it was like a bunch of adults. And then if I recall, the first time I had to watch it was from down the hallway. I mean, and again, because the TV was, it wasn't that far away, I could just kind of stand from down the hallway and view most of it. They wouldn't let me see all of it. And I saw it within a couple of years after that, but I was able to see most of it. And then the parts where I wasn't able to see, I saw from the hallway.
Kind of
So
figured.
I was just old enough for it was, my parents, my dad in particular, I grew up in a very conservative family, but it was like the good old boys conservative. So what I mean by that is like my dad would, give me a beer, from time to time. He would, so because of that, it was like every once in a while, if there was like boobs, my dad would be like, okay, you can see some boobs. You know what I mean? Like my dad was like a friend rather than a father. Like, who knows? Maybe that is the ultimate paternal thing is to, but, yeah, because of that, it's just, my dad was very forgiving and he let me see or, hear or, view a lot of more vulgar films. I remember watching Blues Brothers and, Blazing Saddles when I was only about 9 or 10 years old with my father, and those were the first that and Braveheart. Those are the first R-rated films I remember watching.
Never had that luxury really, because I didn't have any siblings, and my father, he left out on me at a young age. We don't really get along, but most of the films that I was aware of that, oh, you shouldn't be watching this. I certainly knew what they were, but I told myself I was my own censor. My mother didn't even have to do that for me. Pulp Fiction was one particular title that came to mind because I really wanted to see that movie because Uma Thurman, the dark hair, I thought, why is this beautiful woman on this VHS? I want to see what it is. And then when I ultimately saw it, some of the material I found was quite disturbing and a bit pulsive. And some of it was because of that scene involving the eeny, meeny, miny, moe, catch a tiger by the toe, and then the drugs. I don't know if you had that same experience with Pulp Fiction, but that was a movie, an earliest memory of an 18 film that I really wanted to see, but I couldn't.
No, I mean I saw Pulp Fiction when I was like in middle school, and it had like an yeah it had an allure, but it was like it was a very small time. I would say that there was like a 2 week period I remember where I really just had to see that film, and then I finally saw it, and then I've seen it a million times since then. So I think the first time I saw it was pretty mind-blowing, but it kind of lost it a lot. Other than the narrative, the shock aspects of it lost their impact on me a long time ago.